Cade Fulcho. Repeat after me. Cade.
Cade.
Mill.
Mill.
Fulcho.
Fulcho.
Cade Mill Fulcho.
Cade Mill Fulcho.
It's Gaelic for 100,000 welcomes. My name is Joanne, and I'm Irish, as you can tell. My father was Aloysius Patrick Thomas Edward O'Neill, so I qualify. So I'm going to read to you from the Daily Word. And St. Patrick went down into... No, I'm sorry, wrong one. Okay. By the way, happy St. Patrick's Day. Okay. Imagination. I imagine new and positive possibilities for my life. Hebrew scriptures share this reminder, keep your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. When I imagine the unlimited possibilities available to me, I also consider the words Jesus shared. Whoever does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will come to pass, it will be done for him. Ask and it's given. Imagination in my consciousness triggers ideas, but it is through the loving energy of my heart that what I imagine becomes part of my life experience. Imagination continually opens doors for new possibilities, transforming today's vision into tomorrow's adventure. My heart-centered belief in my oneness with the divine power of creation ensures that my life will grow and expand in beautiful ways. And from Proverbs 4:23, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. All right, if you remain seated, we will sing Surely the Presence. Eileen will lead us.
song? I've never heard you sing so vibrantly in all these 11 and a half years I've been with you. If you sing your hymns the same way you sang that song, then you pack this church up. You were great.
Okay, stay standing. Hug an Irishman.
The corned beef wasn't the best. What did you think?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess. Usually corned beef is good.
The Irish man.
There he is.
That shirt.
Well, that's quite an outfit there. I think you take the prize.
Thank you. Are you good?
Irishman back here. So are you a Mardi Gras Irish?
How are you, baby? There.
I'm so excited.
Well, there's the Irishman.
See you later. Come on back. Good morning, darling.
On the calendar hanging up downstairs in the hallway. Any other announcements?
I have an announcement. It's time for people who'd like to read in April and May to sign up. And then I have a speaker announcement. First, I would just say that some of us saw Anitha yesterday, and she's so thrilled with her new job, and she couldn't have written it up better herself. It's going really well. And we have two Unity speakers that are going to be coming for the fourth Sunday in the next few months. And next Sunday, we have the retired Unity minister, John Wingfield, coming. And earlier before church, I sat beside Grandfather and said, I've got a name for you. and I said, John Wingfield. He went, oh, wow. And he couldn't quit talking about him. So I think we have a treat. So come next week and bring all your friends. And then we have Audrey Pletchford, who is a Unity teacher at Olympia.
Unity.
Coming after that. So anyway, we have lots of exciting things to look forward to. And don't forget to tell me you want to read.
A word about your speaker next week. I want you to pack this building out. You're in for a special treat. He is going to be a really fantastic blessing to you. I've known him for a number of years when he pastored in Kent, when he pastored in Lakewood, when he pastored the Unity Church in Yakima. I was a speaker in all of his churches. And you want to contact all the old timers that haven't been here for a while. And then each of you, I want you to invite a friend that maybe has never been here. I want to see you pack this place out. Fortunately, I do not have to be a speaker anywhere next Sunday, and I'll be here. But John is just a really great guy. So you just bless my day by telling me he's going to be here.
Yeah, I can attest to that, too. He was in, I attended when he was in Lakewood.
Oh,
okay. Some of my early years with Unity.
Yeah. Well,
gosh darn it, I will be in L.A.
Well, he'll be here more than once.
Oh, good.
I have another announcement. I know many of you are wondering how my court case has been turning out. And after 8 hearings, we finally before the Washington State Supreme Court judge this last week, whereas this college man had gone to the prosecuting attorney and asked him to prosecute me to the full extent of the law with the heaviest fine possible as a felon. And when I got the letter from the prosecuting attorney to order me to be in court, the prosecuting attorney said I could be sentenced to 5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. This last week, the judge from the state Supreme Court declared me not guilty. Not guilty of the felony charge, and dismissed that part of the case and said, well, maybe there's a misdemeanor, a little bit of negligence here. And the misdemeanor, the smallest fine Washington state law will allow a judge to give is $500. So the judge says, for a misdemeanor, we'll fine you $500. And because you're low income, you can pay that off at $10 a month. That's the same as having the whole case dismissed on me. I just knew you'd be glad to hear that. I've been considered not guilty of the felony. Thank you.
We are holding a special meeting, like an annual meeting, on the 14th of April, because we need the congregation to approve the new bylaws that have come down to us from Unity Worldwide that we tweaked for us, but we still need the membership to approve them. Also, one of the things the new bylaws call for is an alternate board member. Now, this would be someone who serves in place of any board member that might be absent for the board meeting, and generally keep up to date with what is happening with the board, so that they can step in and pinch it when another board member is out. That board, the alternate board member, carries a term for 1 year or until the next annual meeting, which will be the case. Joanne and Susan are taking nominations for that alternate board position. We need to have any nominations that you have sent in or told to them by the 24th, which is next week, at which time we'll send out the ballots for, or the announcement, the formal announcement for the special meeting and the two issues that we'll be deciding during that meeting. If you have any other questions, ask me or ask one of the board members. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe we already have one person in the nominating committee, me. That's nice. So if you want to be on the board, submit your name as an alternate. All right. Oh, the coffee rest up. It's the last weekend in May. We'd like to keep all the money in-house, so we want to get as many people signed up as possible. Otherwise, we have to split it with the senior center again. So start making cookies and stick them in your freezer. Bring in coffee. You know the results. Okay. And now time for our unity statement. We'll say it together. It's in your program. We believe in our oneness with all life and the power of love. We teach universal principles and values as taught by Jesus and others, revealing the one God presence. We practice prayer, meditation, and service to be conscious of our oneness in God. And if you'll stand for the song of joy, when Irish eyes are smiling.
Patience is a state of mind that beholds the world from the harmony of the Christ mind, a freedom from personal thinking. It is an attitude of mind characterized by poise, calmness, and a quiet, restful trust, especially in the face of trying conditions. It has its foundation in love. Great peace have they that love thy law, and they have no occasion of stumbling. The first requisite in the development of patience is spiritual understanding. The larger our vision of life, the more freedom we feel, and we are spared the friction and frettings that come to those who are centered in personality. Whether one is patient or not depends on his view of life If he is selfish and self-centered and lives in material world, bound by his own interests, he lacks the qualities that go to make up patience. We may take the gift of patience and make use of it. We may receive it by faith and then work it out in every department of our being by daily practice of truth. Patience gives self-control. We unfold the capacity to direct our behavior in right ways, a result of spirituality. I realize that I am feeding my consciousness on divine patience. When my thoughts are in harmony with divine law, they develop my body into God's beautiful, indestructible temple. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. I affirm the serene, calm, trustful spirit now accomplishes all the desires of my heart. I rest in peace.
A meditation song from my wild Irish rose. All right, so while Tom gets our words up on the screen for us, we're going to play through the accompaniment one time before singing today.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses.
know, we're privileged to have a different speaker every Sunday with some new ones coming. But our favorite standby is what's your name? Grandfather Roy Wilson.
He's here all the time.
Claudia.
Claudia.
This morning, I have brought a special, special object. An ancient Apache medicine man's drum. I'll briefly uncover it. Traditionally, in our Indian world, we always keep the grandfather drum covered with a blanket when it's not in use. So when we get through drumming and singing, we cover it up again. But I want you to see the drum. There are probably two, three, maybe four of you who have heard me tell the story of this grandfather drum before if you visited the longhouse. Most of you have not heard the story, and I felt that I should bring it and tell you the story this morning. Actually, there are three stories, or three parts to the story, and consequently, I will do my best to make it as brief as possible for each of the three parts so I don't overrun my time. But I am confident that in the 11 and a half years that you've heard me coming and talking to you with messages, that many of them you'll never remember. But this one, I am confident you'll remember this story indelibly for the rest of your life. It's actually three stories all in one story. So the story begins, this drum, as it's ancient, it dates back into the late 1800s. Belonged to an Apache medicine man. My part of the story starts in about 1903. And in those days, much as of today, many of the tribes, at the age of puberty, you go on a vision quest. And that's when you find out, you make your transition from childhood into your adult life. And that's when you discover what your responsibility is going to be in your village for the rest of your life. Many of the medicine men and medicine women, they learn at the age of that of puberty on that vision quest that they were to be a medicine man or a medicine woman for their life. They may begin practicing their medicine at a very young age, but quite different from the white world. In the white world, you go to your college or universities for 8 years and you get your doctor of medicine degree, your full-fledged doctor. But in the Indian world, you may start practicing medicine as young, but you're not going to come to the fullness of your powers until you may be in your 60s or 70s. It's a lifelong process. But in the Indian world, like in all other worlds, there are exceptions to the rule that take place. And such was the case with this drum. There was a Kiowa girl, a teenage girl, who had become renowned through all the southern part of this country as a very, very powerful medicine woman. The Apache medicine man, he wanted to learn much from her, but he knew that different from the white world, in the white world you want to learn something, how much you charge to teach me. Well, you don't do that in the Indian world because we consider these things too sacred for us to put a price on it. You offer your gift. So he knew he had to offer a gift. He thought at first, well, I'll offer 40 horses. And he thought, I'm asking for the most sacred thing she has. And I'm only going to offer 40 horses when I have 80? But even if I offered all 80 horses, then it's not the most sacred thing I own. And then he realized there was nothing more sacred to him than this drum. He offered her the drum. She accepted this drum, and she taught him all that she could teach him from her experience. Many, many years went by. I had, after pastoring churches for 43 years, I decided it was time for me to retire, but the bishop said, no, I want 3 more years out of you. I want to assign you to pastoring an Indian church in Seattle. They said, there are no members, there's no land, and there's no building. But I'll pay you a good salary out of the home missions fund. I might say that 3 years later, when I gave my farewell sermon, there were 147 in the congregation that day. But there were a lot of other churches that pitched in and helped. One was the
Park United Methodist Church in Seattle. And they had this large church building right on the corner of an intersection. It was on a slope. So the parking lot down here was right adjacent to the doors of the base, daylight basement. It had three large rooms, and they never used them, so they gave me the use of those, that whole area free of rent. So one day, after the congregation was growing, this little old ancient woman, long white hair, heavily wrinkled, hunched over, came walking in to my office and asked my secretary, "Is there anybody here by the name of Roy Wilson?" "Well, yes, that's our Indian pastor, our minister here. May I talk to him?" She was the kind of medicine girl, now in her late 90s, very old. The story I've told you about the Apache medicine man and her is the story she told me. She said, "I have been very, very opposed to Christians for many years, been bitter with the way they have treated us Indian people. But I can't help what happened to me last night." Last night, in her Kyo language, she used the word that she said, that means our medicine spirit person, our medicine spirit guide. In our language here, that'd be Tamanawas. And she said, "My medicine spirit came to me in a vision. It said that if I came to this building here, this location, I'd find a person by your name, that you're trying to bring healing between Native American people and Christians. And I was told by my medicine spirit that I am supposed to offer you this drum, that you can use it in your ministry. Will you accept it?" Oh, wow, yeah, yeah. But she left. I couldn't wait for her to get out of sight. I wanted to hear her sing. So this is starting story number two, part two of this story. That first part is powerful. Now this second part, I took the drumstick and I raised it to come down to hear the drum sing, and I got right about there and my arm froze. I kept trying it, my arm froze. My Tamanawas, my medicine spirit. In Christians, you say that's the Holy Spirit, the third person, the Trinity, who searches the deep things of God and reveals them unto you according to the scripture. But anyway, said, "No, you can't play that drum until you have it blessed by a non-Christian Indian medicine man." Where am I ever going to find a non-Christian Indian medicine man who will bless my drum for what I'm doing? Every medicine man I knew at that time was very angry and upset with me because I was simply sharing Indian teachings and culture with non-Indian people. How am I going to find this? Well, at that same time, I had created once this summer, each summer, a Native American family camp. I used Belfort State Park because there you reserve sites instead of this first come, first serve, and I've reserved a whole area of the park just for my Indian family camp. And so, and also at the same time, I was sending out a newsletter called The Talking Stick. I started it by publishing it on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and sent it, first of all, about 11 families that I had names of to start building that congregation. And then next month, when I sent out my monthly letter, it was 9.5 by 14, and then by 14 was sent in, and then I received a grant for enough money to be able to go on actual newsprint and print it as a newspaper. My mailing list kept growing into where I was actually sending my Talking Stick newspaper to a mailing list of over 8,000 nationwide throughout the United States and Canada. And I was going to copy that to every office of every Indian tribe in the United States. So here I was at my third year of this family camp at Belfast State Park. People would start arriving Friday afternoon to set up their teepees, their tents, or park their campers, their motorhomes, or whatever. And in drove this old black big van, dented up van, great big heavy set Indian woman driving it. the camp would go from Friday night through Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then close up the breakfast on Wednesday. And then she drove in, and I was standing there at the entrance to our area, welcoming them, everybody as they came. And she rolled down the window, and I said, "Can I help you?" And she said, "We're looking for Roy Wilson." I said, "Well, you found him, that's me." "Well," she said, "I'm the Grand Matriarch of the Nez Perce Indian tribe. And I'm there, and I teach to all of our tribal youth the old traditional ways and cultures of our culture. And this is my nephew, and he's a medicine man of five Indian religions. And we have been getting your copy of the talking stick at our tribal office. And we've made this trip over here to tell you, you cannot do what you are doing." And I said, "Okay, tell me, what is it that I've said or that I've done that you disagree with? You cannot do what you're doing." "Oh, but you've got to be distinct. Tell me what it is that you're disagreeing with. You cannot do what you're doing." "But we're not getting anywhere. You see that camping spot right there?" "Yeah." "That's yours free. I'll pay for it myself. There's no charge for the meals or for anything here for you. I want you to be feel free to go in and out of any of our workshops that we have in this camp. And as soon as you see something being done or said you disagree with, you come with your complaint, and then we will talk." Well, that evening around the campfire, they were there. The next day in the morning, I saw them going in and out of a number of the workshops. The afternoons were free time. You could hike the trails, go swimming in the Sound there. You could pitch your shoes, play softball, or you could just rest in your camp site and work on your bead work project or your basket weaving you started in a workshop that morning. And so Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I kept seeing them going in and out, and they never came to me with a complaint. Finally, it was Tuesday afternoon, I went to their campsite, and he was asleep in a chaise lounge, she was in a chaise lounge reading a book. And I said, "We break camp after camp tomorrow morning, and you've never come to me with a complaint." Tears began to roll down her cheeks. She said, "This is not what we expected to find. This is beautiful. Will you come to Nez Perce Reservation and do this for us there?" Which later that summer I did. Well, I turned to him and I said, "Your auntie said that you were a medicine man of five Indian religions." He says, "That's right. And you're not a Christian." "I hate Christians. They've been bad people. They have been great oppressors of us." I said, "Well, I've got a story to tell you." And I told him the story of the drum and how that I cannot play it until a non-Christian medicine man would bless the drum. And I said, "Would you do that?" And he asked, "Where do you live?" He thought my drum was at home. I says, "No, my drum isn't at home. It's right here in the camp in my car." And he says, "Where is your car?" I said, "Well, you're in your chaise lounge. Can you see your car?" Because there was a drive in the park, parking site, his campsite here, and his car was parked right across. And I said, "Yeah, I can see my car. Will you see that one right next to yours?" "Yeah, well, that's mine. It is in the turtle bag." Oh. So I took and opened up the turtle back. I raised the blanket, put his hands on that drum. And his hands started bouncing, and he backed off like this. He looked at him, "Oh, that drum, powerful medicine drum. Yes, I bless that tonight." That night at the campfire, before the storyteller started telling the ancient legends, my storyteller had, in his Nez Perce chant, language and chants, he blessed the drum. That's the end of the story, part number two. Another powerful story. Now we just come to the third part, and that's the story of the blanket. While I was pastoring that church, Indian church that I was developing in Seattle, and I was a part of the Seattle World Council of Churches. The Seattle World Council of Churches had 10 bishops, involved in the membership of that council. The Archbishop, the Catholic Archbishop Hunthausen, the Bishop Talbert of the United Methodist Church, the Methodist, the Episcopalian, the Presbyterian, the Baptist, the Lutheran, there were 10 major denominations. And there was this Indian man, Pranwam James of the Lummi tribe, who somehow got on the agenda to meet with the bishops. And he told them, "You Christian people have been the greatest oppressors that we Indian people have ever had, greater and worse than even the Great Father in Washington, D.C. And I've come here to tell you, you owe Indian people an apology from the Christian church." Now, what I've said in about 20 seconds there, he took about 30 minutes. He really laid it on them. When he left, they spent about 3 hours discussing his challenge, and they came to the conclusion, he's right. We do owe them an apology. The bishops had many subcommittees, the Social Justice Subcommittee, Indian Education Subcommittee, the Native American Ministry Subcommittee, and I was a part of that Native American Ministry Subcommittee, and they asked this committee, "You Indian ministers, you understand this challenge better than we do. Will you rough draft an apology for us that we can give?" As I was working with that committee, I couldn't help. The white man and the Roy was apologizing to the Indian Roy. Well, when we finished, and they took it and they really refined it, they really gave it a lot of polish. They then took that, this is in 1987, they took that apology and went downtown Seattle on an intersection that had long ago been paved right over the top of an ancient Indian graveyard. And with a big blowhorn, they read the apology. They then had that apology published in every newspaper in Western Washington. And then those 10 bishops, passed to being the head of hundreds of Christian churches here in Western Washington, they sent the copy of that letter, that apology, to every pastor of every church in all of their 10 major denominations, said, "Read this letter from your pulpit to your congregation next Sunday morning." What was the reaction of the Indian people? The white man, he never followed through what they say, because this is a copy of that apology. And in that apology, this is their actual signatures, those bishops. In this apology, they not only apologize for being oppressive, but said, "We recognize a Bill of Rights for religious freedom and your freedom to worship the Creator in your own way, and we uphold your right to use the smoking of the purification ceremony with the smudge, your use of the bones, the use of the eagle feather, the use of the stones, and all that you use. We uphold your right to do that. We not only uphold that, but we want you to know that if at any time you have any oppression from the federal government, from the state of Washington, from the county or the city, or any individual, you call on us, and we'll be there to support you." White men always speak with forked tongue. White men break every treaty they ever wrote. We get into trouble, we'll call on them, they won't be there. But 1 year to the date, but this apology was read with the big bullhorn over at that intersection over the graveyard, the Indians threw a great salmon feast at Daybreak Star Center, invited all these bishops, then tourist board, council board members, and all to this great feast. There were over 600 people there for that feast. I remember I was sat at the dinner table with my bishop, Bishop Talbert. There were 5 tribes during that year that ran into problems. I'll only tell the story of one, because the others being different stories, but basically the same kind of oppression. And that was Jewel James' own tribe, the Lummi tribe. And there had been a multi-million dollar building contractor who had purchased some acreage and was going to build a multi-million dollar condominium on that acreage. It was an old Lummi graveyard. And the Lummi tribe took it to court to fight him on it, couldn't do it. But they were losing because he had too much money for them. They said, okay, we'll put the church to the test. And they called one of the bishops. That bishop got all the other bishops. They all appeared in that court, and the tribe won. Because of the church's support. Well, that big Daybreak Star Center feast, Ramona Bennett, who was the chairwoman of the Suquamish tribe, she was also the chairperson of the Northwest Affiliated Tribes, a federation of 39 tribes in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. And she was the MC. And she said, we have some stories to tell. So she called the representative from the Lummi tribe to tell their story. When the story was over with, that person invited that particular bishop that led all the others to come forward and gifted that bishop with a hand-woven cedar basket made by one of the women in that tribe. One by one, each of the other 4 told their stories, and each one offered and gifted a cedar basket made by a woman of their tribe to that bishop. When that was over with, the bishops had anticipated this was what was going to happen. I think they've got a speaking word in advance. Anyway, they had a big, large flatbed truck pulled up, loaded with Pendleton blankets, pile after pile, and they said, we want every Indian person here who is a member of a tribal council in your tribe to come and get a free Pendleton blanket. That blanket was my blanket that I received from the church that I loved so dearly and served, apologizing to the Indian world that I loved so dearly. And I said, I have a number of Pendleton blankets, but that blanket is the one that I used to cover the drum. 3 powerful stories. Ramona Bennett, at the end of the gift of the blanket, she stood and said to the bishops and the council members of the churches, for many years, we have been angry with you Christian people, but now you have built a bridge to us, and you crossed that bridge to meet with us with peace. It is time for us to meet with you, for the time of healing has come. What a powerful story. How thankful I am because our great God that we love and serve is here to bring harmony and unity between all people. For as we sing the singing of peace, the song of peace, that is God's song, and I thought you'd enjoy hearing this story today. Let us relax. Breathe deeply. Slowly and deeply. Go to the center of your being. I want you to pick out in your mind the one person or persons who have been the most oppressive to you. You still have difficulty being glad around them. You still carry a little bit of anger and bitterness. See their faces very clearly and distinctly before you. Now ask the God of peace to help you to completely forgive them, to love them. As our Master Jesus said, giving us his principles and values, to forgive your enemies, to love your enemies. Be the one of those between you and them that will determine to bring peace. Anticipate the joy that you're going to feel even in giving up the bitterness. Say, thank you, Heavenly Father.
Thank you, Grandfather. Okay, it's time for our morning offering. There are two containers. The silver one is for supporting our church, and the copper one is for our outreach programs. Our offering prayer is located inside your program. Let's say it together. As we hold our offering in our hand. Divine love, through me, bless us and multiply all that I give and all that I receive. Someone, just call out their name or hold them quietly in your hearts. Prayers for the people in New Zealand. Okay. Let's move on to the prayer. Oh, sorry. Beloved Mother, Father, God, we ask for the highest and greatest good for our brothers and sisters and endeavor to see them through your eyes, knowing all is in divine order. Now let's do the prayer of protection, either on the wall or in your program. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is, and all is well. Mm-hmm. Form a circle, we'll sing our peace song. Thank you, everybody who made our Sunday service possible. Don't forget there's coffee refreshments downstairs.
We can spread out more.
There's a lot of people.
Let's do that. Back up. Why settle for a jelly bean?
Yeah.